And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And we've got some news for you. Let's jump right into the top story here.
Yeah, so Windows 8 at 6 months. So this is a Q&A on the Windows blog with Brandon LeBlanc doing a Q&A with Tammy Reller. And really just some of the highlights. You should definitely read the post to get into it. But 100 million licenses of Windows 8. 250 million store app downloads.
Nice.
So Windows Store is seeing just a ton of app downloads. Mm-hmm. 250 million SkyDrive, 400 million active Outlook accounts.
Great.
So lots of cool stuff. And really, you know, a lot of people have been asking, you know, whether I should build an app, what's the right time, mm-hmm. and some momentum numbers. And here's kind of the latest and greatest.
Yeah. Yeah, really positive. Great to see that. Great to see that leading up to the Build conference, which
yes.
leads us into our next story, which is that we announced this week that Build, at the Build conference, we will be releasing a public preview of what we're calling Windows Blue, kind of the next release of Windows.
Yeah, and this is just kind of a quick post on Julie Larson-Green was at the Wired Business Conference, and you can all read exactly what happened there, mm-hmm. but this is kind of just the recap that if you are attending Build, you're going to get the public preview.
That's right. That's right. So that's really exciting. I think a lot of people probably could have guessed that that would have happened, but always good to have that confirmation.
We release new stuff all the time for conferences.
We do.
Nothing new.
Nothing new. So Visual Studio 2012 Update 3 is now available in a community technology preview format, but the important thing about this, you might remember we released an earlier preview a couple of weeks ago. The important thing about this particular release is that it is licensed for go-live usage, meaning that you can put it on your production servers and that it will be supported when you move from the CTP format up to the final release once that's available. So there's not a lot of new stuff in here. There's a few fit and finish features. Mm-hmm. Most of it has to do with kind of ensuring compatibility with older versions of TFS build servers, that sort of thing.
I did see they had like several bugs that were fixed.
A lot of bug fixes.
Go live process too.
Yeah, so it's a no-brainer release, but if you're looking for major new features, you're not going to see a lot in there. The one that is nice is that if you are setting up build definitions for TFS on-premises to talk to Team Foundation Service in the cloud, you can now use Git repos from TF Service to use as your build definitions there.
Sweet!
Yep, so that's cool.
Very cool.
Also, this one, believe it or not, it's one of the top requests we've heard as a result of these updates, and that is to make ISOs available for the Visual Studio updates. And so we've announced that moving forward, we will make ISOs available. And actually, I recently found a tool called ISO Recorder by Alex Feynman that that apparently has been around for a long, long time. But if you ever need to create an ISO, his tool is I think it's a shareware component, so you can download that and make a donation to him. But you basically just right click on a folder and create an ISO, and you know a few seconds later you're good to go.
And the idea here is for people, for example, that want to burn this to say a disk or DVD.
Burn media or virtual machines are the other big thing that that ISOs are really handy for, because you can just mount them like a DVD.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
So there are those people, and especially you know in the case where rather than 10 people downloading 2 gigabytes or something, mm-hmm. you can have one disk and be able to share that much faster.
Yeah, definitely. The one thing that you should know about the ISO file format is that there's no built-in CRC like there is for zip files or RAR files.
Right.
So it's entirely possible that you could have a bad byte as part of your ISO, and then you run setup, and you know I've seen Visual Studio fail as a result of that.
Mm.
So always a good check to do your own kind of CRC validation against the original bits and the destination bits.
Cool.
Yep. Next up, we have the TFS 2012.2, meaning the update 2 version of the Power Tools are available. And Brian Harry has a post that goes into a lot more detail about kind of the history of the updates of the Power Tools and the updates for the kind of main Visual Studio and TFS products. And basically, what you'll find here is that if you tried to upgrade to, for example, Visual Studio 2012 Update 3, the CTP mm-hmm. we just announced, and tried to install the older version of the Power Tools, it would have been blocked. But what they did with this release is that they actually removed that block, and Brian goes into some details about why the block was in there in the first place, and now they feel confident that moving forward they won't need to have that block because they don't think that there's a high risk of introducing any regressions between, you know, kind of the mainline Visual Studio and TFS updates and the Power Tools.
Very cool.
Yep.
So publishing individual files to your server in Visual Studio 2012. So one of the things that people have been asking for, and this is kind of a nice little secret that people may not have seen, is rather than doing the whole publish web and going through mm-hmm. the whole thing on everything, what if I just need to, for example, I've made an update to, say, an image, I just want to update that. There's now the right-click on a file and the option to automatically publish that.
Yeah, definitely. And so you can take advantage of the same pipeline that's there for publishing your site, for just publishing an individual file. And with a lot of people you know, living in this world of continuous updates where you might be pushing directly to production multiple times a week, this something like this becomes really handy just to say, oh, shoot, we forgot to copy this image or we need to make a change to this web config file.
Right. I'm sure a lot of times it's I think very handy for the personal sites versus one where there's a specific process for anything that hits the production servers
yep.
to go through. This is kind of like the, oh, Brian forgot a picture of a poodle or something.
Yeah, I'm always forgetting those pictures. I would never forget a picture of a poodle.
I know. It's theoretical.
Theoretical.
Which brings us to Tech Ed Achievements. More Chivos, please. So Karsten has been adding more achievements.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously a number of achievements for both Visual Studio, Windows, Windows Phone, Azure, and so on. And these are now very interesting because it's both digital and physical. So there's the golden ticket. So if you're attending and registered as a Build attendee, you actually automatically...
Build or Tech Ed?
Tech Ed.
Okay.
Tech Ed North America and Tech Ed Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You automatically get that. There's the actual app, which doesn't exist yet, but if you install the app, of course, you'll get that. And then other things, for example, like coming on sessions before, doing like 10 evals and so on.
Nice. Gamifying conferences.
Yes, exactly.
Very cool. So is it coming to Build? Is that something that may or may not be in
Give
the
us
works?
Feedback. We'll see
All
how
right.
well it works on Tech Ed.
Cool. So this is a new tool that was released this week in beta format. It's for helping people that need to diagnose .NET crash dumps and inspect live .NET processes.
Yeah, and I think that the unique thing about this is it isn't, like normally you'd be using some of the tools like a Strike or Son of Strike to be able to look at these dumps. This is actually a set of libraries. So I am mm-hmm. literally writing code, API code, that walks through, attaches to a process, does, you know, for each process attached, then says for each object in CLR heap. So the reason why is you can, for example, do some sort of coded UI or some sort of automation
mm-hmm.
to get your app in a state and have your code automatically run. So it's like go through these five steps, then attach the process, and then see what actually happens. So it allows for, and in fact, this is one of the tools that we were using to actually help diagnose bugs inside Microsoft and said, you know what, instead of having a tool where somebody has to manually go there, we can actually do code and use the programmatically find out all the information from a live process.
Yeah, they're the first to admit that this is kind of not something that your everyday developer is going to jump in and, you know, be able to just easily debug. But for those people that need to go really, really deep into the processes and understand what's going on, this looks like a cool tool. Now it's available for you.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. Windows Store App Development Snack. This one comes from a friend of the show, Robert McQueen, a buddy of mine. He's an MVP down in South Africa. And he just goes through the importance of actually focusing on compressing your images when you're submitting apps to both Windows Phone Store and the Windows Store. I knew that there was a limit for Windows Phone applications
mm-hmm.
at which certain point it would no longer allow you to download over 3G, but it would just download over the Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. So 20 megs is the limit. I didn't realize that was where the line was. And so he talks about how with his Windows Phone app, he made it a design requirement for himself to make sure that he fell under that 20 megs,
right,
because obviously that's going to be increasing his adoption of his app. But then he wasn't really paying attention to it when he built his Windows Store app, and it ended up weighing in at 225 megs. So just a good insight into here where he went back and really focused on how you can trim that up.
So cool, very cool.
Yeah.
Inside Code Digger. So we talked about Code Digger, I think it was last week, or maybe the week before, but this is sort of the follow-up interview where Charles goes deep with Nicola and Pelle, and they talk about, obviously, Code Digger being a tool that allows you to inspect portable class libraries and look at what you're sending it to be, to find, you know, effectively corner cases, right? And or all the code flows. So if I have an if that goes here and then nested if, and it allows me to see that value. So if I had some sort of integer that I'm inspecting and doing mm-hmm. a number of things with, allows me to send different values so that I can go through all the different branches of my code and check out extremes. So like int, what happens on a maximum int, mm-hmm. for example? What happens if I send a -1 instead of, you know, a positive number? And you know, those sorts of different scenarios. But it does it all automatically for you.
Right, right. And this is for public members of portable class libraries. So.
Yeah. It's really inspecting a method and allowing you different ways to see the testability of your app.
Yep.
Like, am I getting the expected results, or am I seeing something that, ooh, I didn't really plan for that, or I didn't think about going through that branch of execution.
Or if somebody else's app, especially for portable class libraries that you might be getting from some other organization or from a library that's out there, you know, that you may have downloaded, making sure that you can appropriately deal with that.
And obviously, you know, this is a going deep video, so mm-hmm. Charles definitely goes into kind of how it all works with Pelle and Nicola.
Yep, that's great.
Which brings us to Picks of the Week. So my Pick of the Week is actually the creative coding videos. So I mentioned the creative coding with Processing.js, which is an app you can actually download and includes kind of a two-screen format. One is the code on the left side, and two is kind of the output, so you can see what's going on, and includes the videos. The videos are now just going on Channel 9 and obviously are cycling through the homepage. But there's so many cool things on these images, whether it's the jelly blobs going back to in the top right corner, or for example the emitter drawings. So lots of cool stuff and different techniques that you can use the open source Processing.js library for to add to your Windows Store apps.
Okay. And I would imagine you could probably do this with desktop apps as well, or is this specifically focused on Windows Store?
Well, it'd be any place that processing is supported.
Okay.
How's that?
Okay. Sounds good. So my Pick of the Week, this is a project that's coming out from our friends in the Visual Studio Ranger community. And for those of you that that used to rely on the feature in Visual Studio 2010 that allowed you to create unit tests based on your existing code, if you've upgraded to Visual Studio 2012, you may have noticed that feature is no longer there. And a lot of people have noticed this. It's been one of the very highest requested features from the user voice over on Visual Studio. And so the Rangers took it upon themselves to say, hey, you know, this is something that a lot of people are asking for. Can we build this as an add-in to Visual Studio 2012? So this is them being transparent with that project that's underway and trying to surface their backlog and make sure that you have a chance to go weigh in on what they're doing. So I know they're sprinting fast, and hopefully soon there'll be something that's kind of rock solid that a lot of people can pick up and use as part of the Visual Studio project. So I always love it when the Rangers are like, hey, we're not going to wait for the next version. We're just going to go do this and you know, please the community. So really cool stuff there.
Very cool.
Yep. And we do have a show next week. So yeah, we'll see you coming up on conference season. I always have to keep in mind when we're going to be off the air, but we'll see you back here next week.
Thanks.